Every June 25th is Global Beatles Day, something that's been going on for the last decade and a half or so, and it's often referred to as World's Love Letter Day to the band, and allowing people to celebrate and rejoice the band's ideals and promoting their music. We'll be playing the Beatles throughout the morning this morning. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning, the 25th of June, and it's 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. That was what I was going for the 14 for. It's 14 minutes past 9, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. The show is always more fun if you participate. Panel at WAMC. Well, it isn't always more fun. So sometimes you screw it up, but not usually. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our group to you, fresh from taping the media project, Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm here. That's Excellent. All I can say.
It's as far as you're going. I'm here. I'm ready. That's all. Got it. We also welcome our good friend, Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
Good morning. I am also present and happy to be here.
Excellent. We'll take that as well. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Rosemary, good morning.
Good morning. Ditto.
Now, did you take part in the media project taping this week, or did you have the week off?
I did.
And how did it go?
We only got to one topic this week, if you can believe that.
What was the topic?
It was a big one.
All right. You're going to tease it for, we'll have to wait until Sunday night. Okay.
Tune in to WAMC.
All right. Or anytime online at WAMC.org. And Linda Ellerby is here, a Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist and our dear friend. And Linda, good morning. How are you?
I am present and accounted for.
Excellent. Always wonderful to have you on the program, and we thank you very much for being with us. We thank you all for being with us. Again, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let us start with what is going on in the world today. And, of course, the big story, and there's no getting around it, is that the number of coronavirus cases was the highest yesterday that it has been since the start, that this is new cases from the start of the pandemic. The corona deaths are lagging behind surging infections. However, they may catch up soon. Dr. Anthony Fauci said deaths always lag considerably behind cases. Huge spikes in Arizona, Texas, and Florida, states that reopened early and now are experiencing runaway infection rates are likely to be burying more dead in the month of July. It is sobering. Nicholas Reich, associate professor of biostatistics at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, said as long as there is a fair amount of testing going on, if there is an uptick in COVID-19 infections, then we are likely to see that in the confirmed case data before we see it in the death data. He predicted rises in COVID-19 deaths over the next month in many of the states that are seeing upticks, even though the deaths have been either steady or declining in recent weeks. The virus came surging back in recent days with 38,173 U.S. infections on Wednesday, more than any previous day in the pandemic, including the catastrophic days of April. This time, the increases are mainly in the South and West, while New York and New Jersey, which were nearly overwhelmed in the spring, have been slow to reopen and are seeing declining cases. I just want to point out a couple of things before we go to the panel here. California, which shut down early and has taken a slow approach toward reopening, nevertheless reported 7,000 new cases yesterday, easily surpassing its record of 5,000 set Tuesday. Oklahoma, where President Trump on Saturday held an indoor campaign rally, and Florida also hit new single-day highs on Wednesday. Those three states, along with Nevada and North Carolina, reached new peaks in their seven-day rolling averages, considered a more reliable indicator of the virus's impact. Arizona, where the president had a rally yesterday, set a record with 2,270 hospitalizations. So that's where we are. And while all of this is happening, Vice President Pence yesterday urged Republican senators during a closed-door lunch to focus on encouraging signs. Lawmakers have begun to express alarm about the rising infection rates. And the senator said Pence pointed to positive indicators, including the lagging mortality rate. That is partly because there is more testing, and younger and healthier people now account for larger shares of those getting tested. The president also yesterday said we have it under control. All right. That is what I have. Alan, go to it.
Okay. If you're a Republican governor, you're in real trouble right now. And if you're Vice President Pence, who is, of course, Jerry Mahoney, Linda, only you and I probably remember, you know, the dummy who
pulled what a distinction, Alan, that you and I are old. Remember that. Can I get that on my tombstone?
Paul Winchell, right? Paul Winchell.
Paul Winchell and Jerry Mahoney.
And Jerry Mahoney, yeah.
let's face it.
I also remember when Edgar Bergen.
Oh, yeah, Charlie McCarthy.
Most popular show on radio.
Yeah.
And Charlie McCarthy, right?
Ventriloquist.
Yes.
And Mortimer's Nerd.
On the radio.
Ventriloquism on the radioism. It's really
on the radio.
Quite a skill, isn't it, Linda? Okay.
I know we're going off the rails here, but was Edgar Bergen the father of
Candace Bergen?
Candace Bergen.
Yes.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Okay. But back to work here. Look, these guys are mouthing the words of the president. You better believe that if Vice President Pence has something to say, who is always worried that one day, Trump will wake up and scratch his head and say, "You're gone," which he does with everybody else, and thereby that'll be the end of the vice president. But I have no doubt that the way that this is working is that he is that the president is calling the shots. The Republican governors and the Republican vice president have no choice but to go along with it. Now, how would you like to be Governor DeSantis in Florida as those numbers go through the roof and you still have to mouth the words of the president? It's really very, very troublesome.
And
only for them.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt here just to say something I have been wanting to say for a very long time on this subject. Why are we surprised? What about any of this should be surprising? And why have we had so much trouble until just recently stating the obvious? The reopening around this country was based on politics and economics and not medical research. The decision was wrong. It was too early. People are dying from bad politics, period.
Right.
It is connected. I'm tired of hearing about there's an uptick here, and, you know, there was a reopening here. They are connected. Yes, they are. They opened too early for political reasons, and now people are dying.
Well, and I don't think the beginning of the conversation with the headline that I was reading from the Washington Post, that we're not even seeing. The point is that they're saying, well, right now the death rate is low. Well, you know that's going to change because you're going to get sick before you unfortunately die. But there is expected, and we've seen this. We've lived through this already. We lived through this in March. We lived through this in April when we saw this, when the April was the worst day on record, day in April. So, yes, we're going to see this again. Except this time, it doesn't seem as though, I mean, we have no task force. We don't have anybody speaking out on it other than to say, shut your eyes and let it go away. Jen, were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
No, but I will. It's scary as all get out. And, you know, who's going to suffer? The people. At the end of the day, we have people who are turning, decision makers, I should say, that are tone deaf and turning a blind eye to the realities of the communities they serve. And it's grossly negligent. And it's, you know, I just wonder not only what next, but why do we as a society tolerate that? Why do our decision makers in Congress and in other places within communities, within local governments, tolerate that and say, we're just going to go along? You know, that's the question I'm hearing from my readers and in people, and, you know, it's going unanswered.
Rosemary?
I think the president and the vice president are committing murder, and their accomplices are Republicans in the Senate, especially, although Thune spoke out yesterday. So in light of polls that are reflecting unhappiness with their murdering ways, they're finally talking. But still, they are killing people. They are hiding the truth, and they're disparaging the news media that is carrying the truth.
How'd you like to be somebody like... Hey, Rosemary, how'd you like to be somebody like Thune? You know, having to decide whether being reelected is more important than kissing the president's posterior.
I'm totally enjoying his discomfort. I hope it applies to many more people soon. It ought to. And people who are listening, who are accepting that message, I'm having a really hard time trying to be compassionate. You all have done that very nicely. The people will suffer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're the ones not wearing masks. They're not paying attention about gatherings. And they're going to church and political rallies and beaches. And if that's worth their life, it is their choice. I am unhappy with the leaders who are encouraging this for the sake of an economy, which is not going to come back if people are sick and dying. And the other thing is, let's look at our world standing. We have become world pariahs. The EU is on the brink of banning Americans from entering Europe. Talk about a Muslim ban, which is for horrible political reasons. We're going to be banned for health reasons that are completely legitimate. And there's just no excuse for it, for the leaders or for the people who are continue to follow their very, very bad advice.
So to that, Linda, I'm interested in, and everybody can take a stab at this, but then why do it? What is the playbook here of just ignoring the obvious, which is hundreds of thousands of deaths?
As everyone has pointed out, it's the politics of the situation. If you accept that the first duty of any politician is to get reelected, there's your explanation right there. It's just that simple. And sadly, simple is not the same thing as easy. There is some legitimacy to people needing jobs and needing work. However, as Rosemary so eloquently points out, if you're dead, it doesn't matter whether your economy is working or not. You're talking about Florida. I have been, you know, because I am from Texas, I tend to watch that state very closely and watch what Abbott is doing. And, you know, I don't forget that the lieutenant governor there, Patrick, wanted to throw us all our age under the bus and said that he was certain that the rest of us felt as he felt, that we grandparents would be happy to give up our lives in order to improve the economy. He forgot to ask me. I am a grandmother. I am 75 years old. I will be 76 this summer, and I am not happy to give up my life so that you can go get your hair cut. I'm really not. Now, in Texas, what we have is a situation where you have almost a runaway population that will believe the most outrageous thing or act on it. I can never forget that, and I'm not lying to you here, in the heat of a summer's night in the 1970s, the Texas legislature voted to round off pi to 3. I was there. I know. Just think about that. So, no, you have no problem there in saying, I can believe six impossible things before breakfast. If you think you can change the natural laws, the laws of mathematics, and round off pi to 3, of course you can go out and pretend this virus is gone.
Well, yeah, and
I like Molly Ivins. That was great.
You know, I you can't get around, though, that yesterday the president had a media availability, and no one asked him about the virus. I was struck by that.
Why bother?
Really? But isn't it?
No, I agree. They should have asked.
You're right, of course. I mean, I guess we all know what the answer would have been, but I mean, with the spikes and with this and with these numbers surging, Alan, it seems that, you know, we've politicized mask wearing, we've politicized, you know, whether we're going to go to work or not. And meanwhile, we just see these numbers going across the country and finally hitting a lot of people who didn't think it was a reality.
You know, Joe, you do say, and probably correct, that we've done that, but it really isn't we. It's really the president, because he's the leader. He stands up there. He says we're counting too many people. They're closing down some of the testing, the federal testing
right.
sites now. It's just unbelievable.
Oh, that is.
It is a leadership dearth, which has been created by this guy, and who has announced a number of false premises, which we are all operating from. So for us to say, wear a mask, and for others to say to us, stop talking about wearing a mask because that's the Democratic side. No, it's the being alive side, as Linda has just said.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our spirited conversation. We have a great panel this morning: Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and Linda Ellerby. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night.
Alan mentioned this right before we went to break, and I would like to talk much more about it. Officials in states across the U.S. have reacted with alarm to the Trump administration's plan announced yesterday to end federal support for some COVID-19 testing sites, warning it could cause further spread of the disease that is already surging back and calling the move irresponsible. The White House confirmed it will no longer fund 13 testing sites, including 7 in Texas, despite that state reporting record highs in the number of coronavirus cases. Funding and support for the sites will end this month, even as COVID-19 cases surge across the U.S. The sites are in Texas, Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Colorado. If I live to be 187, I will never see where that makes any sense. Please help me, folks.
Well, you'll see where it makes sense when you see that the only thing that matters to Donald Trump is his reelection. And it keeps.
But does that help the reelection?
He, in his, pardon the word, demented mind, thinks that the more cases, the lower his numbers will go. And so he's been saying we have to stop the numbers from going lower by not reporting on them and not talking about them and not doing what we need to do, which is testing.
So meanwhile, Linda, in your home state, 4 U.S. Congress people from Texas urged the government to reconsider defunding the sites in a letter sent to the Department of Health and Human Services and FEMA. They said that the move would be harmful and irresponsible. Do you think the president will listen?
No. I'm sorry. No. What evidence would I think that the president will listen? As you said, you could live to be 187, and I think it's quite possible you would live to be 187 before you could understand any logic involved here, because there is none.
Yeah.
It's just as Alan said. This is expecting you, demanding you to believe 6 impossible things before breakfast. The Red Queen only asked Alice.
ask her to do it.
But Jen? The factual result is just more deaths on your hand. And I think that's been stated across the panel.
Well, right. You can't get away from those numbers. I mean, those numbers you can't
get away from. You absolutely can't escape that. And you can't escape like the other surrounding factors of what's happening, which is we're in an economic recession. We're in an economic crisis. We're in a public health crisis. As you look at even helping or treating people, people are going to be in a further debt crisis because they're not going to be able, if they're defunding testing sites, what's stopping insurance from not covering these expenses related to this disease? And a disease that is scientifically starting to show that there are long-term effects. So this is going to affect a complete generation in more ways than and longer than Trump will ever be in office.
Jim writes to us and says, I'm with Rosemary on not feeling much empathy for people in the states who have been thumbing their nose at COVID precautions. I do feel sympathy for the healthcare workers who will get hit with the wave and the people who will get caught up in this who maybe have been doing the right thing while their state goes crazy and ignores the situation. Rosemary?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I can add much more. I think that it is striking that even it's fine that he tried this, okay? I have to give it to him. He gambled at the very beginning that the virus wouldn't be bad here and he could get away with acting like it was not a big deal. He lost that. Then he manages to get it under control somewhat, and he goes, okay, we're done now. We conquered it. What did Penn say? We did a great job with COVID, as if it's in the past. And yet now that we see that it's surging, even in places that I think did fairly well at managing it in California, this is a very dangerous, tricky, unheard of, never before dealt with kind of pandemic. And you still have people like Abbott, your guy Abbott in Texas, and DeSantis, who are not taking the steps. Even now, the Houston hospitals are 1% away from being filled with their ICUs. That's as bad as New York. And we're still getting these reactionary, imaginary kind of decisions. It's just the only solution to this is voting him out in November. That's it. If there's anybody alive to vote.
That's what I was going to say. It's a lot of death between now and November, though.
Yeah.
And Rosemary, could we just change the pronoun from him to them? Voting out.
That's a good point. You know, Pence is right up there with them. Talk about
and
because, you know,
Mitch McConnell.
In a way, he might be
and
even worse.
And every other spineless Republican governor, member of Congress, or member of the House of Representatives, or member of the Senate, who has been
I just want
has
them all gone.
Not found
I
the
really
courage
and I
end up.
Oh yeah.
And voters. I mean, how can you? I every day I look at my Facebook feed to read the defenders. You know, the people who just think this is fine. I can't explain. I really am trying to be empathetic and to have a dialogue with the other side and all that good stuff. And I am not feeling it. It's so unnecessary and so stupid. And we're talking about Kung Flu. Come on. Even his language is disgusting. He has to make that racist. Awful.
Alan?
He thinks he'll win. He thinks that's the way to win. He thinks, look, we all know, we political scientists know that people keep going back to their original victories and say, that's the way I won the last time, so that's the way I'm going to win this time. But his numbers keep going down and down and down. And now he's 14, 15 points behind Joe Biden. Joe Biden is saying, you know what, I think we'll have a virtual convention. I don't think we need to go out and say anything. Let him go into a big room with a lot of people and do just as well as he's been doing as his numbers continue to fall. So he keeps doing the irrational because he thinks it's going to work in his own mind.
We got a letter from Frank who says politicians like Trump and Governor DeSantis are the ones who would say all lives matter, even though That is just their racist mantra. If they really believe it, why would you not mandate mask wearing, which could save all lives? The governors of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut should go further than quarantine and stop the flights from those states in total. Ed writes, dear panel, do you believe that? No, I'm sorry. That is on a different subject. This is to Bob, who says, of course it was the wrong call. As long as we are following money grubbers and their elected toadies are in charge and murder and the gates of despair is loosened on red Republican magical thinking. I don't feel bad for them. They are reaping what they have sowed, hate for educated citizens and the science they follow. Not sure I follow all of that, but okay. And we go to this letter that said, in case nobody noticed, the bulk of the surge in virus infections has occurred across the Sun Belt, where the majority of governors have an R after their names. The residents of these states are paying the price for their governor having listened to Dr. Trump as opposed to Dr. Fauci. Well, we were just talking about that, weren't we?
But his uncle was a scientist, so he knows.
Right. Remember when he said, you know, I'm really good at this stuff. People say, how do you pick up all this stuff? And I said, I'm just really good at this stuff.
You're a stable genius. It's easy.
Kevin says, call me crazy, but I see Trump loving the spike in outbreaks of coronavirus. He does not address it anymore, and I believe he thinks it will stifle turnout in November, which would likely favor him. It would also give him a rally cry of a quarter of the population had to vote by mail, energizing his base. Am I crazy? Asks Kevin. Anyone on that? No? All right. Joanna writes, the federal government should use the War Powers Act to force companies to manufacture hundreds of millions of N95 masks so that everyone who is willing to wear one can have them. Homemade cloth masks and even surgical masks do not offer enough protection for people to safely interact in public life. Second thought, offer a $1 million prize to engineer and design the best reusable full-face clear mask with silicon gasket and removable filter cartridges that could allow people to see each other's facial expressions. Wishful thinking, I think, there, too, since we can't get people just to cover their face.
I'm going to second that, Joe. I mean, you know, I have to say that it's infuriating to watch people walking around without masks after everything we know. And we do know that even though the letter writer is correct, there are better ways, there are better masks. The very basic is to cover your face with a mask. And we know that an awful lot of people aren't doing that.
I go online at various town Facebook threads in this area.
Right.
And I know, Alan, that you have seen what I have seen. The number of people who flat out call it a Democratic hoax, and by God, you're not going to tell me that I have to wear a mask because the Second Amendment says I don't, or something on that order, about that much sense. You know how widespread it is right here where we live, that arrogance of you can't tell me what to do. And I'm not wearing no mask.
Yeah, you know, Linda, yesterday, I think I mentioned this already, I sat on Railroad Street in front of our favorite Japanese restaurant there, and in a table, I was wearing my mask. My partner took hers off in order to eat her food. I thought that was so unreasonable. And and people
couldn't
would
get the sushi IV drip.
And people would walk by the table, literally walk by the table with no mask. Don't you see? As Festus would say.
Don't you see? We have to take a break, and we will do so. We'll leave you with this. Susan writes and says, I love the analogy of Pence to Jerry Mahoney, but Pence is more like Knucklehead Smith.
I'll accept it.
We'll let you ruminate on that. We'll take a break and be right back.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
Welcome back to the Roundtable playing the Beatles this morning as part of Global Beatles Day. We got this from Barry, who said, thanks us for playing the music, and says the Beatles were booked to play a gigantic stadium in the Deep South. They found out that the seating would be segregated. It was the 1960s. They just couldn't understand that and said if the venue didn't have open seating, they'd cancel the concert. The venue refused and the concert was canceled. That group of kids had intelligence, ethics, and soul, and I miss them. That from Barry. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Our panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and Linda Ellerby. Let's move on to some other news that is happening, and let us talk about our Attorney General and William Barr. The question, analysts say that Barr is eroding the Justice Department independence without facing any real personal consequences. Consequence. Thank you. Took me three times. I got it. A federal prosecutor's testimony Wednesday that he was pressed by supervisors to offer a more lenient sentencing recommendation for a friend of President Trump's capped a remarkable four-month stretch in which Attorney General William Barr has seemed to repeatedly bend the Justice Department to Trump's political interest, generating significant controversy but no personal consequence. That, according to legal analysts, since February, Barr has intervened in two criminal cases to the benefit of those who once advised Trump, ousted a U.S. attorney who was investigating Trump's personal lawyer, and dutifully implemented Trump's vision for a forceful crackdown on demonstrators in the district protesting police violence. Democrats and legal observers have decried the moves, calling on Barr to resign or be investigated by his agency's internal watchdog. Rosemary, you want first crack on this?
Okay, yeah. Outrageous. The behavior of Barr, like that of Trump, is impeachable. But will it ever happen? I don't see it. I think that the Democrats in the House have not done oversight. They have just become, it seems to me, rather accepting of this. Like, oh, that's the normal. Nothing can be done about it. They've given up. Mm-hmm. Where I think I would be perfectly happy with another impeachment effort. And John Bolton, another coward and crap head, has said that the Democrats were guilty of impeachment malpractice. And I think that, in a way, that they're right. There's just too much acceptance of what is extraordinary and awful. Jim Jordan, he's somebody I want to get beaten to, is still defending the president. It's crazy. This is what do we have to hear that would make someone act to get rid of these people who are not doing their jobs? They're violating the Constitution, and we're tisking about it.
Well, what do you want to do, Rosemary?
Can I ask Rosemary a question on this?
I want measures taken, a disbarment effort, and impeachment. And if it fails, as it did with Trump, fine. At least they're on the record. They will be doing their oversight responsibility.
Well, and I think part of the problem is that, you know, we don't hit this man hard enough with accountability. Back when he was ruled to be, you know, held in contempt, it was just a word. It was a slap on the wrist. He's a multimillionaire. We never find him. You know, that was a problem, and that was an opportunity missed too.
Alan?
No, I mean, look, we keep coming back to the same issues. He's the head of the Justice Department. They're the enforcers. I sympathize with every word that's been said because I'm as outraged as everybody else on this panel. But it is so clear when Jerry Nadler was asked, should we impeach him? He said, no, it's not worth it.
Yes, I mean, exactly. And you can understand why he's discouraged. Look what he went through with Trump at the end of last year.
Too bad that's his job.
Well, I think you agree.
May I ask a question here?
Yes, of course.
Because my heart agrees with you, Alan, and with you, Rosemary, with all of you. It agrees on this. However, and I'm not, Alan, when you referred to political analyst earlier, I am not a political analyst. I am a recovering journalist, which means that an election simply is my renewal of my license to pontificate without knowing much. Nevertheless, if I were thinking politically here, what might I not be saying? Okay, let's keep our eye on the ball. And the ball is the election, the presidential election in November.
Right.
If, as Democrats, we continue to go after these repeated, and I admit, hideous offenses, are we taking our eye off the ball? Is it not better to work as hard as we can to reclaim the presidency, continue holding the House, take over the Senate, and the following day impeach Trump? Start from the head down. Get it through the House,
that
get it right through the Senate,
great
and
idea
take him out before
Obama
he
tried to
hold on, hold on.
And ignored Russian interference and said, no, no, I'll just wait till Hillary's in and then we'll clear up problems on the Supreme Court and with the Russians. It did not work. Please let us take that as a lesson. The time to act is now when the offenses are being committed before everyone forgets about it.
And how do you want to act? And how do you want to act? I don't get that. In other words,
well, she wants him to be impeached.
Yeah, I've already said it. Impeach him. Start disbarment procedures. File a complaint against him to the American Bar Association, or to the Disciplinary Council.
Sounds
treat him as you would any other lawyer committing heinous crimes.
And the question, I'm sorry, Jen, just a quick question for Linda, but do you think, Linda, do you see a place where you can do both, where you can keep your eye on the prize and say, yes, and here's a really good example why?
I think, yes, you could certainly use this as one more example, as if anyone needed one more example.
Good point.
I don't know the answer to your question, Joe. And Rosemary is quite likely to be more right than I am. She knows more than I do to begin with. But it seems to me that we need to be very directed right now. My God, the 200 judicial appointments he's already had should be enough to scare anybody. That he has a corrupt that he has surrounded himself with corruption is not news. Where do we stop if we start impeaching every one of them? When in fact, whom we need to impeach is him. So I don't know. Maybe we can handle both now in all of this political times. But when you look at the other things that we are dealing with, you talked about the economy. We have talked about the virus. We are also in a fight for this nation's soul when it comes to race. I just think that we need to sort of prioritize anything. And I know that sounds terrible. It sounds like I am okaying Barr's behavior. I'm not. But I don't think the election is going to turn on this. I think it's going to turn on the economy and the virus and racism and you know, those things more than Barr.
Jerry Nadler's job is the Justice Department. And he does not have to be involved in all the other issues. He does not have to be involved with racism or the economy. He just has to do one thing, and he's not doing – who's doing the job? Nobody's
Rosemary, we're losing
job.
You there. Rosemary, get closer to your mic. We're losing you.
Okay. I'm saying okay. Nobody is doing their jobs. Jerry Nadler does not have to prioritize because those are not all his responsibilities.
Jen, I promised you were – about to say something.
Yeah, so well, just on the question of Nadler's decision, he says, you know, don't waste your time in impeachment. But then, you know, here's what he says. He says, you know, we're going to subpoena him and we're going to withhold $50 million from the DOJ. Is that effective enough? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it's hitting in the right place. Hard enough. And then there's just the ignoring of all the people in this field, in the legal field, who, you know, you have the George W. Law School professors, the New York City Bar Association, and like more than 2,000 former Department of Justice staff declaring this man unfit to serve the role of upholding the Constitution as he's assigned to do, and yet nothing, no one is doing anything about it.
Mm.
That's a problem.
He's getting special treatment the same way Roger Stone and Michael Flynn got special treatment because of his connection to the president.
Right.
And Alan, yeah, in those cases, I mean, especially Flynn, which we heard about yesterday, I mean, yeah, get away with it. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about things that just don't make sense. But here's a guy who pled guilty on three times he pled guilty and will walk away.
Well, this is what I'm sorry, but this is what happens in a dictatorship. And that's where Trump is taking us, towards an authoritarian form of government. I don't mind. Well, I do mind, but I really shouldn't mind the appointment of conservative judges. That's the way it goes. But I do mind them acting as political prostitutes. I think that that is where, you know, you really have to start to shiver when that appeals court lets Flynn off the hook. It seems to me the word comes down from the White House and they jump and behave the way they're supposed to.
Right. You know, we always extol the American system, which has checks and balances and many interlocking organizations, civic organizations and advocacy groups that protect the structure to prevent the kind of tyranny that we're beginning to see. So how can we argue, oh, no, don't use it. We have to pay attention. We'll get them out at the election. No, use the instruments we have. And Flynn, yes, a three-panel part of the appeals court ruled 2-1 to let him off, to not even let the judge inquire what the government was doing. But that's not the end of it. You don't give up. You appeal to the entire appeals court, and then you go to the Supreme Court as well. And if you lose, okay, but at least you try. Yeah. That's what the system's set up for. Why would we not use it? Because we have race problems and health problems.
Jen, go ahead. We just have about a minute and a half.
Yeah, I just think that the challenge of that is that it's a lengthy process. And, you know, the system doesn't afford enough tools and enough legal avenues for recourse. And I think that's a problem that needs to change as well.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue after this break.
I look at all the lonely people. I look at all the lonely people. Helena Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Is it for all the lonely people? Where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Thursday morning. It is the 25th of June, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and Linda Ellerbe making up our panel. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We have a lot of letters. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can here and then move on to some other topics. Dwayne says, two quick comments to Rosemary. I can't go on Facebook anymore unless I want to get a rage-induced ulcer. A family member recently put up a post stating a statue of Obama offended her and it needs to come down and be burned. Ah, says Dwayne. Second, I read in the New York Times that the Biden campaign has been receiving $1,200 donations from folks irritated by Trump's signature on their stimulus check. My wife and I sent a donation to Joe, that would be Biden, not me, from our stimulus check. Take responsibility for that, Donald. That from Dwayne. Leslie says, let me go to Kathy, who says to the panel, especially Rosemary, have you considered that if you start impeachment proceedings against Barr now, you may energize Trump and his base, which is exactly what we don't want. There's no value to standing on your principles and winning a victory such as that.
I go back to Obama, who with good reason and those same motivations, not wanting to get Republicans overexcited and believing Hillary would win and that would solve everything, ignored issues that we now, 4 years later, are facing again, foreign interference in our elections. Did that work? No, it did not. So why would we do the same thing? Try a different strategy. Use the mechanisms we have to call attention to terrible wrongdoing.
I want to take another view on that, take another point of view on that. Rosemary, I understand completely what you're saying, and as usual, it's a brilliant analysis. However, I do think we're in a position now where Trump is killing himself. Little by little, every time he goes before the public, every time he opens his yap, every time he says something, his numbers are going down. Biden understands it. It's sort of jujitsu. You let the other guys, the weight of the other guy, kill himself. And I think that that's what's happening right now. No matter what you say, it's all very good. But in the end, the only thing that's going to get that guy out of there, and I'm worried about this because I do think he's going to cheat, is the election. And right now, he's 14 points behind and falling. Let that continue as far as I'm concerned.
Lawrence writes, does anyone else feel that as his poll numbers continue to slip and his chances of re-election recede, Trump is only becoming more and more potentially dangerous in more wild and unpredictable ways? Alan?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I worry about this. I worry about his use of forces. We saw yesterday he's moving troops out of Germany and putting them into Poland. And we do know that he has friends. We know he has the Russians are his friends. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And we got to stop this Russian thing, he said. That's why I fired Comey. He talk about traitorousness. The Russians, of all people, the Russians, he's in bed with the Russians, and we know it, and he's said it. It's incredible.
We got this from D, who said Trump hinted at fake numbers of cases and deaths in the recent past. Watch now as he brings up unreliable statistics. His base believed all his lies before. They'll follow along again. Trump loves having enemies as a smokescreen for his incompetence.
True, but the base is decreasing. That's the point. I mean, in other words, 14 points is huge. If you get anything like 14 points in an election, it'll be an incredible blowout.
Patricia says, I believe we should not be comforted by the polls nor promote what the polls are saying. In 2016, I could not believe this buffoon could have won. I spend the winter in the Southwest, and Americans west of the Mississippi stand by Trump. Lazy thinkers and people refusing to admit they made an error in judgment on their vote in 2016. Alan?
Oh, I would like to respond to that.
Oh, sure.
You.
Absolutely, because I was very strong in my feelings in 2016 that Trump was going to win because people were lying to the polls, the pollsters. And I think that, I forget the name of the lady who just said this, but she's right. I think you must be very wary of polls. What we learned in 2016 was that there were a lot of people out there who were racist who didn't want to be called racist and didn't want to admit they were going to vote. We vote by secret ballot, okay? There were a lot of misogynists out there who didn't want to appear to be a misogynist. So your polling was not at your polling was not accurate. I used to work with a man named Reuben Frank who mm-hmm. once said many years ago, if polling is so accurate, why are there so many different companies doing it?
Because there's money in it, that's
I agree.
Why.
Yeah, exactly. But I think distrust of the polling is going to be critical here. We must take nothing for granted.
You're
not
right.
Not the falling numbers that he has right now. Nothing for granted once that people get
true.
In that voting booth or in their get their computer or on their mail, whatever.
Well, but you're right. But Hillary did get 3 million votes more than this character. 3 million votes more. It was the Electoral College, and we don't know what kind of hanky-panky went on in those states. But in those states, the polling, which was correct in terms of a national picture in 16, is now saying Biden is quite substantially ahead in each of those states. So I'm going to take some comfort from the polls, but to take too much and not to do anything about it and not to work hard would be stupid.
See, that is my fear, is that we will get so comfortable with the polls that some people won't vote.
That's a good point.
Or some people, like some millennials did, I don't want to pick a fight with the millennials, but some who said, gee, wasn't Bernie or Jill Stein, I'm just going to not vote because I can't vote my morals without understanding that only one of those two people was going to be in the White House, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. We need you to vote. We need you not to believe the polls. We need you to pretend the polls don't exist. Go in and vote this man out of office.
Rosemary?
And count on the Trumpers to make it as hard as possible to vote.
Hear, hear.
Oh, so how do we overcome that, Rosemary?
Well, again, it comes to numbers. A landslide would change everything, and that requires everyone to get out to vote. All those people protesting and marching, all those young people worried about the environment, all those old people worrying about the end of democracy. We have to stop talking, get off Facebook, probably stand in lines for many hours in many places and vote. That's the only solution.
And enable access. I think there's still that problem. I mean, some of the young people that are out there aren't old enough to vote. Some people, you know, they are waiting in lines, and, you know, we worry, and it's going to be a longer time with all the paper ballots that are coming in to even see how that process is going to happen. It's going to be a very anxious time to not only cast your vote, but to make sure that it is actually being counted accurately.
Let's go back to the letters. Betsy says, under the Trump administration, even before Barr, systemic racism is the problem, from the war on black and brown immigrants and their stance on marijuana legalization to their erosion of civil rights and unquestioning backing of law enforcement. The Justice Department is not divorced from Black Lives Matter or other movements to get rid of systemic racism. Giving preferential treatment to Trump's white friends while black and brown people die from the coronavirus is part of this, too. It is all connected. Impeach and remove this awful representative of repression and systemic racism. Diane says, I fully agree with Rosemary. Barr and Trump will never be held accountable for crimes committed by both of these men. They are, in real time, committing crimes against humanity openly for the entire world to watch, and they are literally killing people because of complacency regarding COVID. It is unspeakable. Because Trump was acquitted during impeachment for crimes with Russia and Ukraine, now Trump is using Russia out in the open once again to steal the 2020 election, and he will succeed. We are running out of time.
Yep.
Joe says, do something now. Later is too late. With the courts being manipulated in such an outrageous way, i.e. Flynn, why do we think they won't corrupt the elections? Every little step of corruption that's taken without recourse smooths the path for bigger and badder actions of corruption. Concentrating mainly on an election that could very well be false and fixed is an evasion of the part of Congress. Our laws are being broken, and at the very least, stand up and force people to acknowledge that fact. I'm terrified, says Joe.
Well, Joe, I'm totally liking the flow of these letters. You got it. We are not doing our job. We're like giving up. We're putting hope in the future and that the election will go our way. We did that in 2016. Stop. Do the job now. Right.
Alan.
Well, Rosemary keeps going back and forth, and I love Rosemary, of course, and have great great respect for her, but she keeps going back and forth. She said that Trump was going to win this election, or was going to prevail in this election, because win is a bad word. I said, no, this is going to be a blowout, and it's going to be a blowout for Biden. Now, how far this despicable president will go to cheat in this election is another whole story. I don't know the answer to that. And I think we have to be incredibly vigilant. But I'm one of those who truly believes our best shot now is this election, because I can't see, the Congress of the United States with that United States Senate standing up and saying anything dramatic to this president or to this attorney general.
Well, to just stand up for myself for a minute, I was feeling quite hopeless and predicted that he would win, and that was before coronavirus, race riots, his increasing dementia, and his performance in Tulsa. So, yes, I admit to a little bit of hope. Still don't see it as a blowout, but I do admit to some hope. And I really hope you're right that it'll be a blowout, Alan, but I still don't see that. And Linda is absolutely right. There can be no complacency. I don't care how great the polls are, how big the gap is. If that leads you not to vote, to think, oh, it doesn't matter, then we're doomed, as we were in 2016, when 60% of the population almost did not vote.
I am not for complacency. That's all. I think it's very important to remember that if everybody doesn't really do everything they can, he could prevail.
John says Trump's plan is to turn up the Hunter Biden Burisma rhetoric with huge revelations provided by Giuliani, looking for the same swing in public opinion, just like when Comey reopened the Hillary email investigation.
That was bad, but it won't work. Not we've.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you think it'll work this time?
No.
Yeah, would that work this time?
No, he tried. That was then, and as Alphonse D'Amato once said, that was then and this is now. It's changed.
You almost have to be our age, Alan, to remember Alphonse D'Amato.
It's so true.
Jeff says, Rosemary, don't feel guilty about struggling to find empathy for those who make decisions based on willful ignorance or greed. This situation is merely exposing the shallowness and immaturity of our consumption culture that lives in a cloud of denial fueled by the evil of Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, and the like. Those of us who want to live reasonable, peaceful lives are trampled by the wolves. This is natural selection at work. You're either a predator or a victim. Just wait until the fallout of global warming really hits us. These will look like the good old days.
Oh, my. That's even more cynical than I am.
I was going to say, that's...
Okay. Farmers. Why does any farmer in America support Donald Trump? Explain that to me. He has taken away their markets in China. He's taken away probably the possibility of getting them back. They are subsisting now on subsidies that if Democrats ever get back in control, they will lose immediately. Why would you vote for Donald Trump?
Why would a black American, African American, or a gay person in the U.S. LGBTQ
or women,
Trump?
Right.
Why would a woman vote for Donald Trump?
Yeah. I don't get it.
All right. Let's go to Ray says, thank you for the discussion today. Does anyone want to discuss the gross undercount of fatalities due to COVID-19? Well, we have talked about it, and that's certainly something to keep in mind. We have seen states like Georgia where there is believed to be a gross undercount.
Well, if somebody dies if grandpa dies or grandma dies, of a heart attack and it's really COVID, do you really want to make a big thing about it, especially if they're not in the hospital and diagnosed by a doctor? I mean, we do know there's an undercount, no question.
Yeah, I think it's the effects of that undercount that happens in our understanding of what's going on here. And I think that's the dangerousness of undercounting, among many other things. Ignoring the fact that undercounting is also happening in communities that are being affected disproportionately, whether that is black and brown and immigrant communities or communities like our population in nursing homes and our population in veterans homes.
Michael is confused. He's looking for help from the panel. Forgive me for not paying attention in civics class when I was in the 11th grade, but I do remember that we are a nation of laws that are defined in our Constitution and punishable if someone breaks those laws. How is it that people who break our sacred laws can go on merrily without consequence? Is our system dependent on the morals of the people in power? Are there no protections for this country?
There are fewer than we thought there were. Many of the things that we thought were always deeply American and would always be there have turned out to be just based on the honor of our elected leaders. And now we've elected leaders with no honor, no sense of shame. I hope that Joe Biden will get elected and spend his first year removing every appointment made by Donald Trump and codifying every norm that he violated.
Wow, that would take longer than a year, don't you think, Rosemary?
We'll also still
can he say, I'll do that my first day in office? Isn't that the usual line we get in debate?
I'd like that even better.
My first day in office, I'll rescind all those regulations he rolled back. We're going to go back to the old way.
We have some polling questions or comments. This from Bob. Esteemed panel, never, never underestimate the capacity for a mainstream Democratic nominee who stands for nothing in particular to blow a major lead. I give you the presidencies of John Kerry, Michael Dukakis, and Al Gore, all of whom led by more than 20 points in midsummer. But they weren't running against Donald Trump, right, Alan?
I agree. That's exactly what I was going to say. So you said it better than I could.
We just said the same thing. Good morning, panel. Alan keeps talking about Biden being 14 to 16 points ahead, which what is really disturbing is given the incompetence and corruption of this administration, that Biden isn't 50 points ahead. And regarding the popular vote, it doesn't mean a thing. All Trump needs is 270 votes in the Electoral College, and as far as I can see, he still has a good chance of getting those. But
not according to the polling. Now, if you don't believe the polling, then that's your entitlement. But in all of those states, including Pennsylvania and all the others, Trump is falling.
Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, right?
Absolutely.
A lot of bad news in all of those polls.
Bad news for him, not
correct.
For me.
Correct. Well, yes. Yeah. I will clarify that. Let's see. Trump's planned fireworks display at Mount Rushmore is a celebration of white supremacy. Carving white presidents' faces into the Black Hills desecrated this site that is sacred to the Lakota Sioux Nation, the Black Hills' rightful owners. The Treaty of 1868 promised the Sioux territory that included the Black Hills in perpetuity. Perpetuity lasted only until gold was found there in the 1870s. Massacres and forced abductions of Sioux children followed. Lou is on testing. The other reason Trump is ending COVID testing is distraction. Watch what the Justice Department does next. Pardons for his allies coming, .. says Lou. Ed said,
oh, I have no doubt about that one. I mean, the most dangerous time in America, assuming that Trump loses, will be between his loss and his leaving office. And that's
I'm with you, Alan. That's why earlier I brought up the fact that my choice is we take back the House, we take back the Senate, we continue to hold the House, Trump is defeated, and you impeach him the following week because it is too dangerous to leave this man in office until January 20th.
Well, now that's interesting. The problem, is you can't.
The takeover doesn't actually happen until January 20th in the Senate and everything as well. Nevertheless, if he is roundly defeated in the presidency, and if the Democrats do take the Senate back and hold the House, there will be Republicans in the Senate who will suddenly find their spines.
Really?
Yeah, but the problem will be that, right, Joe, the problem will be that they'll be on their way out.
Yeah.
In other words, you have to assume if there
is as long as they vote to impeach.
Well, why would they?
As long as they vote to convict.
That why
tail,
would they?
That tail between their legs doesn't necessarily have to be a spine.
No, I mean, I hear you, and I have I have doubts as to when they get out, whether there'll be any recrimination taken against the Trump. If I know the Democrats, and I agree with a lot of the comments about spinelessness, they're going to let him go when he gets out. They're going to let him go, and they're going to say, let's not remind people about him. Let's not make him into a victim. Leave him alone. That's my bet.
All right.
I'm not so sure that that is a bad thing. I mean, the lock her up thing is insidious. We do not prosecute political enemies in this country. I don't totally disagree with that.
What do you mean totally? Okay.
Well, because I think he's committed worse crimes than
Hillary.
You know, than other ex-presidents have been accused of. There are business crimes. They involve his business dealings before and during his time as president, and that should be action should be taken about that. But there's no doubt that any prosecution after it happens after 2020 and a hopeful loss would be political.
All right, we have 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Okay. We have 2 minutes and three letters, so let me see if I can get to these. Carlita says, okay, guys, if it takes 2 weeks for symptoms to show and for people to start getting ill, why are the phases rolling out in less than two-week intervals? I'm very worried. Yesterday, I looked at the dashboard, and there were 46 active cases in Kingston, which is not a huge town. And if you think that each person might have infected three other people, that's not insignificant. I know someone who died yesterday of COVID, and sorry for your loss there, but it is a good point about
well, sometimes one, sometimes, Joe, it takes one person to infect 100 people.
Right. Ann says, did Elise Stefanik fly home from Tulsa in a commercial jet after appearing maskless in the audience at Trump's rally, potentially spreading the virus? And could she be chosen as a replacement for VP Pence, who undoubtedly will take the fall for the mishandling of the pandemic in the USA? We talked extensively about the second part of that question earlier in the week, so I would direct you to that. As far as Elise Stefanik flying home, I did look that up. She flew on Air Force One. They were brought in together, so she flew back on Air Force One, at least according to Forbes. And we have, let's see, a minute. Ed says, do you believe that Mr. Barr will actually testify before the House Judiciary Committee, as he has promised to do regarding the firing of Mr. Berman, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District? If you do, I have a bridge in Tarrytown I'd love to sell you.
Oh, I think he will testify. I would take that bet. I think he will say nothing, but he will testify.
Tony says the only way to shame AG Barr is disbarment. Even Roy Cohn was eventually disbarred. The New York Bar should step up. We'll pause there. We'll take a break, and we will be back. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and Linda Ellerby, all making up the panel this morning. A vigorous and good conversation this morning. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue right after this.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be. Let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. I wanted to spend a couple of moments on talking about an issue that I think is really interesting. Linda and I were talking about this yesterday and on a phone call, and I thought it would be good to talk about what we're seeing a lot of. We first heard this as we were having the protests in the streets and shortly after the murder of George Floyd. The concern by entertainment companies to pull back things like Gone with the Wind, to put them in context, to add content at both the beginning and the end of the film, and then to represent them that way. Just over the last 24 and 48 hours, we have seen Tina Fey, the comedian, SNL writer, and also responsible for 30 Rock, come under fire as she has requested that blackface episodes of that program, 30 Rock, be pulled from streaming services and not ever be allowed to air again. Jimmy Kimmel, the host of the ABC late night program, has also apologized, performing in blackface. We should also note that Jimmy Fallon, the host of The Tonight Show, also has come under fire for performing in blackface on Saturday Night Live. Into all of this is a reexamining of movies, because as all of this was going on and we were watching people take to the streets, they were saying, people were putting up lists, the media was putting up lists that said, well, here are some films that will help you, that are movies that will help explain the black experience. So films such as The Help, films such as Harriet, such as Green Book, were put up as examples of films that could be watched. Now, there are many scholars, both film scholars as well as those scholars in African American history, who say that those films should be considered white savior films, and are not, both in their production, are mostly produced by white America and white Hollywood, but also are not accurate and give the wrong message, as opposed to that there are better ways to learn about America's history and racial inequity. Linda, how did I do in setting that up?
Well, I think you did right well. This came about because I was telling Joe that because of so much that has happened and because of my own failure to realize that I had not been enough of the solution, therefore I was still part of the problem, and trying to examine inside my own prejudice or racism that I was not aware of. And quite frankly, I came across the term white savior film as the first time I had ever heard the term. So I began to read about this, and I began to understand what they were saying, though I did not agree with all of it. But I will tell you that among the movies that are considered white savior films and therefore not good films are Glory, The Help, Blindside, Green Book, Mississippi Burning, A Time to Kill, Amistad, Dances with Wolves, 12 Years a Slave, Cool Runnings, Django Unchained, Hidden Figures, and Lawrence of Arabia. Now, many of these are films that I enjoyed. But now in reexamining everything, I realized that something like Lawrence of Arabia, which was gorgeous to watch and a fine piece of entertainment, was indeed a white savior film. So we come back to the films, and the issue comes down to who's making the films, and what is the message. Where I have a problem with some of the films that are being labeled, don't watch it, it's a white savior film, for example, is, now I understand that Hidden Figures, that many people are very angry because Kevin Costner, you know, allows her to use one of the hidden figures to use a bathroom closer to where she was. For me, when I watched that movie, it was not a white savior film. It was a film about a piece of black history that I didn't know about. And it seemed to me that the incident in the bathroom was not the overriding thing. For me, it was learning about the contributions of these women. Same with Mississippi Burning. Yes, the white FBI comes in, but you know what? In 1964, that was the only way it was going to get done. And it turned out the perpetrators who killed Cheney and Goodman and Schwerner were, in fact, the cops
So I see some value in that, but I also take the point of what's being said, and I wanted to know what other people think, and I think we don't have time.
No, we do. We have some time. Rosemary, you were very eloquent last week when we were talking about Gone with the Wind, I thought, because you were relating it and also comparing it to the source material, which was the book, of course, by Margaret Mitchell. What do you make of this current wave?
Well, I thought this was really interesting, and my first reaction was like, I'm not going to talk about this because I'm afraid to. I'm going to say something that I deeply feel and may end up offending. We are in a time when white people shouldn't be talking. This is, we got to listen right now. And so I worry about this. I mean, Mississippi Burning was by the savior in that, the real white savior, was Jerry Maguire, the reporter from the Mississippi paper, who did remarkable investigative reporting that brought the FBI into that case. It really was true. I mean, there have been whites who have fought on the side of their black allies. And why is that story not to be told? That Lawrence Arabia, okay, that was a colonial period. He was a bigger-than-life guy who goes down there and is going to save the Arabs. But the context is in the movie. I think it's historically correct. The ones, so I would defend those movies, and I think context is there. Some of the other ones, yeah, I really... No one's calling for censorship, which would be easy to say, no, this is, we have to keep these. This is, there are value to these films beyond their mistakes. But nobody's calling for censorship. They're saying, let's look at it in light of these criticisms.
I think
Spike Lee has been absolutely eloquent on this, and I love Spike Lee movies, too.
You know,
so you can look at these from both. Yeah, Gone with the Wind is a hard one because the book is, it's my mother's favorite. I was reading it to her, all 1,100 pages. That's why we talked about it. But there's no question that it's a white Southern point of view, the lost cause, all that stuff. It's in that book. You cannot read it and not see the bias of it. Pull down the statue.
Jen, I want to get to you, of course.
Yeah, you have to reconcile nostalgia with what we know. You know, we know much more. And I think the bigger issue with these films is, A, why are we looking to largely fictionalize, even if it's historical fiction, films as primary sources for understanding someone's experience? We should be talking to people. You know,
well, because
no
Spike
one
Lee
film...
movie Do
well,
the Right Thing, though fiction, is talking directly to people.
Mm.
And we have used fiction as a manner in throughout history as a way to tell truths.
It is. It absolutely is a storytelling vehicle, but at the same time, it's no replacement for what's, you know, what's happening in our own communities. And we have so much nuance in our lived experiences. I am not Black. I am Indian, an Indian American adoptee who was raised in a white family. And for many reasons, there is no one I can say that is really telling my story. I'm not represented. Why was it such an issue that Parasite, you know, earned the accolades that it did because it was a non-English film? There are much more bigger issues within, you know, Hollywood that it has to confront its own racial bias and discrimination. And again, it's the same thing with who's telling the story as someone said, you know, there's not representation that's equitable across filmmakers, across producers, across advertisers, across funders, across writers who are actually putting together the scripts and building the characters that are telling these stories. And, you know, there's a lot of glass ceilings and barriers for people to get those important stories that do exist out there. There's plenty on the indie circuit, but they're stuck there. They're not in front of the mainstream, and that's you know, a deficit for audiences to not be able to see and understand and appreciate these stories.
Following that up, one quick thing that Linda mentioned that I think bears repeating is the fact that who is telling these stories? And often, even if it is telling the story of Black or Brown America, it is being told by white people, and who is working on the film, and who is being cast, and who is being starred. The other thing that I would just like to get back to is some of the things about regarding Jimmy Kimmel and Tina Fey and this idea of blackface. You know, I was reading an article about this, and they said that they unearthed an episode of 30 Rock. Well, first of all, it's never been out of syndication. And second of all, that was 2013. Like, it wasn't really, I think I have salad dressing in my refrigerator of that vintage. I don't, you know, that's not all that long ago. And
we've known better since the 1960s not to do that.
Exactly. Exactly. And, but where was the outcry then? And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have the outcry now. I'm just wondering that what is being done, and it's just, I guess my concern is why it happened in the first place.
And, you know,
can
I think
I try
it's,
and address
again,
that? I think that by the 80s, most American white people believed that we had reached this kind of post-racial state of social relations, which, you know, resulted in some, there were more pro-black movies made by black people about movies in the 60s and the 70s than there were in at any time after that. In the 1990s and the 2000s, you had a lot more of the white savior narrative. And I think it's because the majority of white people in the United States didn't know enough black people to understand that wasn't a real experience, and sort of thought, well, gee, look, we elected a black president. Look where we are. Aren't we something? Yeah, we are something.
Yeah,
but
those
not
are
what
no
we
laurels.
Were.
Those are no laurels to rest on. And, you know, as much as,
exactly,
you know, Jimmy Kimmel and Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon are taking culpability, shame on SNL for, you know, saying that's okay.
Well,
for
that's
giving
what
that
I'm wondering.
Not scrutinizing that, you know, shame on 30 Rock's NBC, right? I don't watch
yes.
a lot of mainstream
yes.
television, but, you know, shame on them for enabling that episode to
shame
get out
on Lauren
there.
Michaels. Shame on a lot of people.
Shame on all of us for not bringing it out.
Exactly, Linda. Yes.
Yeah. And I think, again, but again, we have audiences who have never been exposed to seeing diverse and rich content. We see that in literature all the time. We see that in textbooks. That's a problem. We see that in front of our students in our classrooms. How many of us had teachers of color? You know, these are the problems when you don't have representation in decision making, in messaging. You know, you're missing that, and you're missing out on what you're missing. And that creates ignorance, and
you know,
it perpetuates ignorance.
I was thinking of what you were just saying, Jen, a few moments ago about, you know, not having your story being on screen. But really, the only, I mean, other than Gandhi and Slumdog Millionaire, what did you have exactly?
Well, I was actually talking with my partner about this last night. So growing up, I had Apu's wife on The Simpsons. And then I was like thrilled when this movie called Bend It Like Beckham came
out.
Yeah. It was like a British movie. And so I had Parminder Nagra, and then she was on ER for a little while. And now I have Mindy Kaling. Love Mindy. But again, like, we also do come from different backgrounds. You know, she's got a great show about an Indian American girl going through teenagehood on Netflix now. But that's one. And, you know, when do you see, you know, how many of you can name a strong Latina character, or, you know, Latino character, Asian character, or Native American character that's out there that wasn't part of an indie film, that wasn't having to do with their culture, but just as a character, you know, just as a character in a rom-com, as a character in a horror movie? Speaking of horror movies, who let, you know, Get Out and Parasite be classified as comedies? These are problems.
Well, we are. So now, Linda, we are out of time. But thank you very much for the discussion. Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks to Jen and to Rosemary. Linda, thank you all. Great to have you here. Great discussion. We'll be back right after this.